Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Horticulture Week editor Matthew Appleby, and today I'm with Paolo Arrigo of Seeds of Italy, who's been the importer of Franchi seeds for more than 20 years. So welcome, Paolo.
Hi, Matthew. You're making me feel very old now.
Well, I hear you've just been unloading some trucks in the summer heat. So how is importing at the moment? How are you coping with bringing things in from the EU?
Yeah, we did a festival yesterday and unfortunately the van has to be unloaded today, and it's going to be the hottest day of the year. So that should keep me fit. Yeah, so to answer your question, it's challenging. You know, to be honest, we said before the referendum that if we raised barriers to trade and we lost our freedom of movement of people and goods and, you know, voted to become a third country, that trading would be difficult, and importing and exporting, and that has been proved to be the case. And the other thing, you know, to remember is that Brexit hasn't actually happened yet, in the sense that there are still some transitional rules and regs in place from you know, when we were full members of the EU. So when people do say to us, "Oh, don't worry, Paolo, you know, things just need to settle down and everything," actually, that's not the case. Things will probably get worse and will get harder. So some things we can get in quite easily, and then some other things. I mean, last year we got our first two pallets of tomato seeds in through Brexit, and they arrived on the 3rd of July, which is pretty much like having Easter eggs for Christmas. It wasn't much good at all. Luckily, we had stockpiled, but we were down to our last four tomatoes. So, you know, so this is real. This is a cause and effect. And it is a thing.
So now Boris is leaving. Do you think that's going to ease the Brexit situation, or will it make no difference?
I like to think that whoever comes in next takes a softer line on Brexit and is more open to, you know, considering the effects of Brexit are having on the British economy. And I think, you know, they are coming out now. At first, you know, people said there was scaremongering and Project Fear. But actually, a lot of these things are clearly affecting British business. And that's detrimental. It's detrimental to, you know, our lives. Just when, you know, there's the Ukraine war having an effect, and there's COVID having an effect as well, we've got this additional handicap, which is causing further problems. So I hope whoever does come in and who does replace Boris is more open to business, will listen to business, and will see that the current course we're on is not working.
Is there anything specific you'd like changed?
Personally, I think going back into the single market would be the ideal, because we wouldn't have had any of these problems with trade had we stayed in the single market, and we would have been outside of the EU. But unfortunately, it was just never on the table. It was always Brexit means Brexit. You know, look, everyone knows me in the industry. I'm very comfortable with my pro-EU views. Is the EU perfect? No, it's not perfect. But my view was always, let's stay in it to change it. And, you know, we've always been, Britain has always been a driver, you know, a driving force within the EU. We're founder members of the Council of Europe as well, and still members of that. And in fact, the EU flag is shared between the EU and the Council of Europe. So, you know, we're very much involved in Europe. We're geographically in Europe, but unfortunately for trading, we're outside Europe now. We're considered a third country like Nigeria or Egypt or Australia, and that is going to create obvious problems.
Well, I mean, you've been very outspoken on Brexit, you know, ever since it sort of came on the horizon. What do you feel your levels of support are within the industry? Do you think, you know, the industry, you know, thinks the same as you?
Well, Horty was pretty much pro Remain. You know, when you were talking to people in the industry, that was the general consensus. English roses are the best in the world, you know, and we have to export those. And now we're in a situation, if you speak to the rose growers, plant producers, you know, we ship many, many plants. It's not just plants coming into the UK from Holland. You know, British growers, British producers have really got their hands tied at the moment with bureaucracy, with paperwork. Look at this heat out here. You know, I'm in an air conditioned office, so I'm happy. but you know, is a lorry driver going to get out and water 10,000 plants in the back of a lorry because it's been delayed due to some, you know, paperwork bureaucracy at the border? Of course not. You know, you're going to have a lorry full of twigs arrive. We need seamless trips through customs. We can't have delays in our industry. And actually, that goes for others, you know, where you have animals involved, where you have meat or fresh goods. You know, this could potentially cause many, many problems. We all know the problems the fishing industry is having, sausage industry and other prepared meats. So this isn't just horticulture. So yeah, things will really, really have to change.
Were you glad when the border control post thing got delayed? Do you think that will ever sort of come back?
So, yeah, you're talking about place of destination, I think it's called, PODs. And so what that means is essentially the border for checking of our goods is moved from an actual warehouse, let's say at Dover, to our warehouse. So think of it like a bonded warehouse where we're not allowed to touch the goods until they've been either cleared or inspected. And cleared. And that has actually worked really well for us. And I suspect it's a lot quicker for plants as well, that they can just be, you know, delivered direct to the importers and distributors. I think obviously if there is a warehouse situation, that there it would be temperature controlled and they would have thought these things through. And don't forget, of course, from an AFA perspective, from a plant health point of view, plant health has always been a thing. Pre-Brexit, post-Brexit, during the EU, plant health, we do not want to import seeds and plants that are infected with diseases, and neither do we want to export them as well. You know, this is a two-way street. Trade is a two-way street. And so long as everything works with this new centre, then, you know, and it can be checked there, goods can be checked there, that's fine. But for us, the POD scheme works really, really well, and I wouldn't be at all unhappy if it was kept on. But again, it keeps being kicked down the road. You know, this is a transitional rule, and it creates uncertainty. You know, what is going to happen in 6 months' time? Will we have POD? Will we have this? Will we have a new rule? Will we have a new regulation? And this is business hates uncertainty.
No, indeed it does. And there's been a lot of uncertainty created by another big serious overseas issue, the Ukraine war. And you have been out there on a mission to bring aid, haven't you? So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a little bit more than that, actually. So on day two or something of the war, I couldn't look at another piece of footage of refugees arriving at the border, and neither could I, for me, you know, neither could I give 50 quid and forget about it, you know, to a charity. And I said to my wife, listen, darling, I love you very much. I'm going to Ukraine tomorrow to help. I've got to do something more to help. And to very puzzled looks from my from my wife, but she saw that I was determined and that I was sort of passionate about going. And she said, right, take someone with you and take advice. So I did. You know, my brother-in-law is a professional soldier, and he gave me some advice as well, although I'm a seasoned traveler. And so we left, and it turns out I was the first private Brit on the border with Ukraine in Dorohusk, taking refugees to safety. So we go in large cars, seven-seaters, because the problem is with a van, if you go out full, but you come back empty because you've only got two or three seats. So our aim was for the refugees. But whilst we were going out, we would take aid as well to Caritas right at the border. And I've got to say, we went out without a crowdfunder. We broke down. It was a very eventful trip. It's a very boring trip. It's a very long trip. But, you know, this is war in driving distance. From Calais to Lublin, where we used, which we used as a base, is only 18 and a half hours. And that's quite sobering. And although we don't get into Ukraine, we go down to the border. So it's not the front line. I can tell you that you see the effects of war. You are in a war zone. You see injuries, you know, and wounds. You see desperate people who are just coming across that invisible border from Ukraine into Poland and collapsing. Railway carriages that were intended for eight people have got 24 people in them. They're dehydrated. They've lost their house. They've left their menfolk behind. They're coming through that. It's all women and children, and they're coming through with a plastic bag. And then after this trip from wherever they've come from, you know, they've got to go to a sponsor. People are giving, like here, you know, British people have risen to the occasion, and they've been offering rooms and registering and raising money and aid. It's just the reaction in the UK and other countries has just been extraordinary. But they still have to get from that border point to wherever it is they're going, Amsterdam or Poland or Belgium or wherever it is. And we can take them there. So we literally pick them up, and we're called direct drivers. We're registered with the Polish police. You just register when you turn up, and you tell them where you can go. They assign you a family. And often, you know, we'll stop and we'll take the kids to McDonald's. And I have to say on occasion that they have actually offered to pay as well, which considering they've just lost their house and the situation they find themselves in, they're just such dignified people. So that's what we've been doing, and we've taken 23 people to safety. And my view is that if I can take a fighter's family to safety, then that fighter doesn't have to worry anymore. Do you understand what I'm saying? But it is very emotional. There are tears. It's very, very it's a very difficult situation. But to know that you're there and you're helping is obviously there's no price for helping refugees.
No, indeed. You've obviously got a lot of connections out there. So what's the current situation?
Yeah, I do now. Yeah, that's for sure. We form sort of bonds with others that we meet out there. And it's not just me that are going out there. There are people flying in from America, from Canada, hiring seven-seaters, literally going to the borders to do direct driving. People turning up all over from Europe as well. We bumped into a married couple that had got married the day before, and instead of going on honeymoon to Barbados, they basically turned up at the border and said, right, what can we do to help? And so you see the best and the worst. So to answer your question, you know, first thing is that they do need aid. They need things like power banks because there's no electricity. So to charge up their electrical devices, drones, also mobile phones and things. Don't forget that when you're giving aid, it's actually going to three groups of people. It's going to refugees who are arriving in Poland and border countries. So, you know, women's hygiene products, nappies, powdered milk for children, but just generally new clothing, you know, underwear is really useful, but it has to be new. It's still in the packaging. Food aid as well, medicines and medical supplies. It's also going to people who were left behind, who couldn't flee. So the elderly and disabled, especially people who have decided to remain. So things like adult diapers are in demand, and things that might seem banal to us here on the ground. But people who have stomas, you know, can't go to the local GP and just pick up stoma supplies. So things like stoma bags and sort of even more mundane everyday medical equipment. If you've sprained your shoulder, you know, those special supports for your knees and stuff. And of course, to the fighters as well. So aid does go to all three groups. They are actually having issues with water and food supplies as well. And really good hiking equipment is useful. So clothes is one of those things that is less important, especially in summer clothing, and is quite easily available. So, you know, when you are doing collections out there and you are collecting aid and stuff, sleeping bags, camping equipment is really important as well. And please make sure that it's not just throwouts. Make sure it's clean and it's good quality stuff is what I would say.
No, brilliant. Well, thanks, Paolo. I think you've been doing a great job for the whole industry there.
But... Can I just say, Matthew, just one thing. Ironically, the first family that we picked up, it was a lady who had an 8-month-old baby, and she was from the town of Irpin, which had actually been, you know, significantly flattened, and she had been working as a garden centre manager.
Wow.
So, you know, honestly, it really brought it home. You know, just everyday people doing everyday jobs. And you know, there I was. And we had this bond straight away. And we've kept in touch.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, that's good that you've found that connection. I mean, all these macro impacts have a big effect on trade and business, and
yes,
even filtering down to the UK horticultural industry.
Yes.
So what do you think that means that 2023 prospects are for the UK horticulture industry when we're sitting in this place where we've got Brexit, we've got this war, we've got all these outside influences which are impacting?
I mean, I don't think any of us in our lifetimes would have imagined Brexit, COVID, and a war in Europe, because that's what it is. And so the combined effects are going to have an effect, absolutely. So from my perspective, I think Grow Your Own, which we saw a huge jump in demand during March 2020. I think we went into lockdown on March the 26th, didn't we? Roughly speaking, and then there was this huge jump in demand. I believe someone said that it was 60-fold demand for vegetable seeds at one point. I think that will continue, not to those levels, but I think there will be still a demand for veg seed. Veg seed through time, through history, has tended to increase during periods of crisis. Now, that's not a good thing, in the sense that trading conditions obviously now are really, really bad. There are going to be issues with energy, so transport costs, fuel costs are going to increase. So Ukraine will have an effect as well on food shortages. That's going to impact Brexit and COVID, both as well, additionally cause problems with food distribution and supply. You know, people were sick. There were shortages of lorry drivers. We know that, that Brexit has caused shortages in the labour market for our industry, for Horti, but also in transportation and other things. So I think certainly from a veg growing perspective, I think grow your own is going to be continue to be a thing. It's going to be strong and it's going to be stable. We may see some fluctuations in it. Adversely, at the same time, I think we're also going to see, you know, extra demand on these vegetable varieties. And so there will be shortages. You know, Brexit has meant that, that some varieties are harder to get in. And we've actually stopped importing some of the ones that didn't perform as well, didn't sell as well. And you know, financially, they just wouldn't have paid their way, really. But I think going forwards with all the additional pressures of Brexit, COVID and Ukraine, I think, you know, we'll see increased demand. And then we'll also see, you know, this extra pressure on seeds. So and possibly plants as well, that will spill onto vegetable plants as well.
Is there anything in particular which is hard to get at the moment or will be next year?
Yeah, I think the thing that all the seed companies have been struggling with, and if you'd have looked at their websites last year, you would have noticed lots of sold out notices next to tomatoes, peppers and chilies in particular. Now, that's partly due to the extra rules and regs on brown rugose virus. The thing is that with Brexit, what's happened, some of the rules for testing, etc., where things would have been tested in Italy before, and that testing regime would have been suitable for any EU country. Now, you know, there's extra testing when goods are arriving in the UK, and extra paperwork and extra costs. And so, I mean, obviously, I said before, plant health is really, really important. You know, we do not want brown rugose virus, and we do not want to export brown rugose virus. But just the extra rules and regs are making things longer to arrive and more costly to import. So those three items and items that have plant passports as well, they can take a little longer as well.
No, indeed. So how would you sum up the 22 season? How was that?
So after 2020 and with COVID, and then that went into 2021 as well, and you know, with the Brexit and COVID problems, you know, the sales were absolutely booming. I don't think anyone in the industry has ever seen demand like that. And can I just say, it was, I'd never want to see that again. It was unworkable. The thing is, it's not like a telephone or a computer screen or a paper cup that where you can just go and manufacture that product. You cannot manufacture seeds and plants, you know, at the end of the day. And so it's more like the thing I would say, it's more like a restaurant. If you have 80 covers and then all of a sudden you have 4,000 people turn up, there's no way you can cope with that. So seeds are finite, plants are finite, they have to be grown. And so it wasn't a very nice experience. 2021 was back to normal, plus 5% or plus 10%. You know, I think it was much more like a pre, you know, a BC, a before COVID year. I think buying patterns are still a little bit skew-whiff. I mean, we would naturally know how many of each species, you know, of tomato seeds or pepper seeds to have in March or in May or in June or in September, etc. But now people are buying things, you know, in advance in some cases. And we are seeing buying patterns a little bit, you know, they haven't settled down yet. I'm not saying people are panicking we've all become preppers. But certainly, I mean, I keep a full tank of petrol in my car now, that's for sure. That's not panic buying, you know, that is just being sensible. I think Horti is a really good industry to be in. I think, as I said before, you know, veg seeds and food plants, veg plants, especially herbs, will be buoyant as well. And let's not forget as well the environment. There's a lot of, you know, the leadership contenders at the moment. They're all going on and they're doing head-to-heads and stuff, and they're all talking about these issues and trade, etc. They've really forgotten about the environmental impact. The people, you know, us buyers, consumers, we're really passionate about global, you know, climate change. Hey, I'm in an air-conditioned office, it's going to hit a new temperature record today in London. You know, the previous record, I looked it up, was 38.5. They're talking 40, 41. I don't know if you saw recently, glaciers in Italy have been breaking. One, unfortunately, collapsed and there were many fatalities. This is a real issue. You know, the environment, biodiversity is still a thing. It's going to be stronger, but I think it did go off the boil during COVID and Brexit and Ukraine, but it's there, and it's very, very important that we keep reminding consumers as well. As an industry, we have a responsibility. You know, we have a responsibility not only just to get rid of plastic packaging, if we have plastic packaging, to reuse that packaging so it's not wasted and it doesn't go into landfill. But plants and seeds are a win-win-win. You know, they're a win for everyone. So, yes, I think that's something that we should be focusing on in 2023 as well.
So potentially good news for the seed sector in 2023. Well, we've covered a lot of ground there, Paolo, and it's always great to talk to you because you're always full of views, which is brilliant. But we always finish the podcast with a final question, which is, what is your favourite plant? What plant would you take if you were on a desert island and you only could take one?
Oh, my word. I think it would have to be tomatoes. I think there's nothing better than when you pick a tomato and at air temperature, you know, in the summer, and you hold it to your nose and your hand smells of the plant, and then you take that tomato, preferably an heirloom tomato. Look, I think any tomato that you grow in your garden, that's great. But yeah, I'm not a great fan of the corporate sort of mass-produced varieties that are out there. I much prefer sort of the heritage varieties. And you cut that tomato and it's on a plate, it's 10 minutes old or 20 minutes old, and you get your olive oil and you get your burratina or your mozzarella and some fresh basil. Basil that's been planted in the ground, not in a pot. You know, ground-grown basil is so much more fragrant. Pots dry up, especially in this weather. We're forever watering them. And there's just something magical about this little seed that you put into dirt and you water, and you end up with this magnificent, red, pulpy, sweet, juicy tomato in your plate. And I think that's the flavour of the summer. And don't forget as well that it's something that's just so versatile, that you can can a tomato, or as the Americans call it, you know, you can bottle them, you can make sauce, and you can freeze them whole. They're just one of the most diverse vegetables, you know, fruits, technically a fruit, isn't it, that you can grow in your garden. And we've got a lovely climate in the UK for growing tomatoes. It's temperate. You know, we don't get these temperature bounces that you'll see in Italy. Very, very cold winters with snow and skiing. You know, Italy's a 74% alpine country. People always forget that. And then, you know, summers that are very, very hot, which can cause massive problems. We're much more much more stable. You know, we have winters that are cold but not too cold, and summers that are hot but not too hot, but of course hot enough to grow tomatoes. And we have greenhouses as well, so we can extend that season. So for me, no question, it would definitely be the tomato.
Great. Thanks, Paolo, making me feel hungry, so I'm going to have to go. But so thanks very much to Paolo Arrigo from Seeds of Italy, and I'm off to get my lunch. And I'm Matthew Appleby from Horticulture Week. So make sure you never miss a Hort Week podcast. Subscribe to or follow Hort Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. So once again, thanks to Paolo, and goodbye till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.